We would like to send out a special thanks to HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit, for sponsoring this episode. Go to HelloFresh.com/50WentCold and use code 50WentCold for 50% off plus free shipping. Enjoy the episode.
May 10th, 1967, Hannibal, Missouri. 13-year-old Joey Hoag, his 11-year-old brother Billy Hoag, and their 14-year-old friend Craig Dowell leave their homes to explore some caves, but never return. Even though a massive search effort is conducted of all the caves in the area, they fail to turn up any trace of the boys or any evidence of what happened to them. Over the years, there is speculation that a construction project caused Joey, Billy, and Craig to become trapped in a cave, or that they may have been abducted and murdered by an unknown third party. But the Lost Boys of Hannibal are never found. After that, the trail went cold.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host, Robin Warder, and this week, we're going to be covering a case involving three missing children, the 1967 disappearances of Joey Hoag, Billy Hoag, and Craig Dowell, better known as the Lost Boys of Hannibal. That voice you just heard narrating our intro was Christine True, the latest winner of our most recent Trail Went Cold listener voiceover contest, so thank you very much, Christine. This is a recurring monthly contest which we've been carrying on for 6 years now, so if you'd like to enter and haven't already done so, I will be providing instructions near the end of this episode. Anyway, the Lost Boys of Hannibal was the case that Christine requested I cover when she originally entered this contest. It's an incredibly tragic story which took place 56 years ago in the town of Hannibal, Missouri, which is best known for being the childhood home of one of the most iconic writers of all time, Mark Twain. Unfortunately, the other thing Hannibal is famous for is this case, which wound up receiving national attention when it originally happened. Since there were a lot of caves in the Hannibal area, Joey Hoag and his younger brother Billy developed a fascination with exploring them, but after leaving on an outing with their friend and neighbor Craig Dowell, the three boys vanished without a trace, and it was instantly assumed that they may have become trapped in a cave. An extensive search effort was launched which drew volunteers from all over the United States, but this would mark the very first time in American history when a search and rescue operation failed to recover a person who had gone missing inside a cave. And the fact that it involved three missing persons only made the story even stranger. Since there was a major construction project taking place in Hannibal at that time, it has been theorized that this may have caused an accidental cave-in which buried the boys and made it impossible to find the remains. But since there is no concrete evidence pointing to any theory, the possibility of them becoming the victims of foul play has not been completely ruled out. As part of my research, one of my most valuable resources was a book titled The Lost Boys of Hannibal, Inside America's Largest Cave Search, which was released in 2017 by author John Wingate, who had grown up in Hannibal and was 13 years old when the disappearances took place. In addition, there's also an extensive long-form podcast out there titled Lost Boys of Hannibal, which is co-hosted by Chris Coders and Frankie Cambaletta, who are also working on a documentary about this story. I'll go into more detail about this later on, but these sources have differing views about certain aspects of this case, including the potential involvement of an infamous serial killer. But I'll try to provide my own balanced view on this episode. Anyway, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word and garner us more exposure. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, including stickers and thank you cards, early accessed episodes, and bonus content. Also, I just wanted to announce that this coming Saturday, August the 12th, we'll be holding one of our annual Unsolved Mysteries Live Watch Marathons, in which I screen classic segments from the show, and you can watch them and chat with myself and your fellow listeners. It's taking place at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and if you'd like to join us, you can find the link to our screening room in our show notes, and it's also pinned to the top of our social media pages. So with all that out of the way, let us now explore the story of the Lost Boys of Hannibal. Our story begins in 1967 in Hannibal, Missouri, a town located along the Mississippi River in both Marion and Rawls counties, which had a population of just under 20,000 at that time. Nicknamed America's hometown, Hannibal is most well known for being the childhood home of Samuel Langhorne Clemens, who grew up there and went on to become one of the most famous writers of all time under his pen name, Mark Twain. Twain's novel, The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, and its sequel, The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, were both set in the fictional town of St. Petersburg, Missouri, which is based on Hannibal. As a result, Hannibal has its own section called the Mark Twain Historic District, and one of their most popular attractions is the Mark Twain Boyhood Home and Museum. However, Hannibal is also well known for its caves, as one of the big plot points in The Adventures of Tom Sawyer are when the title character and his friend, Becky Thatcher, get lost inside a cave for several days. Before they are rescued, they wind up crossing paths with the story's villain, Injun Joe, who gets trapped in the cave and dies of starvation, and this eventually leads to Tom and his friend, Huckleberry Finn, discovering some stolen gold Joe had hidden inside there. The cave in the story is named McDougal's Cave, which was based on a real cave in Hannibal called McDowell's Cave, but following the success of the novel, it would be renamed Mark Twain Cave. For the past 137 years, it has been one of Hannibal's biggest tourist attractions and became a registered national natural landmark in 1972. So, needless to say, a lot of Hannibal's young residents grew up having a fascination with caves, as many of them had lengthy passageways which often connected to each other. Anyway, our three central figures in this story are 13-year-old Joel Hoag, who goes by the name Joey, his 11-year-old brother William Hoag, who goes by Billy, and their 14-year-old neighbor, Edwin Craig Dowell, who goes by his middle name. Joey and Billy's parents are Mike and Helen Hoag, who have a total of 7 sons and 4 daughters. Mike and Helen own a popular restaurant on Main Street called Hoag's Tavern, and the residence is located on Fulton Avenue. As for Craig Dowell, he lives with his family on Union Street, right behind the Hoag residence, and ironically enough, his mother works as a cook at the Becky Thatcher restaurant. Joey was known for being a fairly serious and grounded child who loved looking at the stars through his telescope and dreamed of becoming an astronaut someday, whereas Billy was known for being mischievous and adventurous and a major influence on his older brother. Craig was described as being a very nice but quiet kid who would sometimes come across as a bit of a loner who liked to keep to himself. At this particular point, Joey and Craig are 8th graders at Hannibal Junior High School, while Billy is still attending A.D. Stoll Elementary School. During the late afternoon of May the 10th, the three boys return to their respective homes from school. Mike and Helen Hoag were out shopping at the market, so Joey and Billy cross paths with their 16-year-old sister, Debbie Hoag, who went by the nickname Dee Dee. Before she left, Helen had instructed Dee Dee and her 15-year-old brother, Tim, to keep an eye on Joey and Billy and not let them leave the yard. The south side of Hannibal had a number of high hills with caves, many of which were connected to each other. At the time, a major construction project was being performed on Missouri Route 79 by the J.A. Tobin Construction Company from Kansas City. This involved the usage of large earth-moving equipment to dig through the ground, and the road crew would often set off dynamite through tons of rock. The construction work wound up creating a number of holes and a new maze of passageways that led into Hannibal's cave system, so adventurous kids from the town now had some new places to explore. One of these locations was Murphy's Cave, which had previously been sealed, but the construction wound up creating a new opening between Walnut Street and a nearby viaduct which spanned over Bear Creek. On May the 8th, Joey and Billy decided to check out Murphy's cave, but a construction worker spotted them and warned them that the area was too dangerous. Regardless, the two brothers decided to return there the following day and explore the cave, but when they went back home, they were covered in red clay. This enraged their parents, who said they were no longer allowed to leave the house without permission and ordered them to stay away from the construction zone. After the boys returned home from school on May the 10th, Dee Dee confronted Billy while he was heading outside and reminded him that he was not allowed to leave the yard. However, by the time their parents got back from the market, Billy was no longer in the yard and Joey was also gone, so it became apparent that they had snuck out. Mike and Helen told Tim to search the neighborhood for his brothers, but he could not find them. Joey and Billy were both members of the Royal Ambassadors, a youth group at Southside Christian Church, but even though a meeting was supposed to take place there that night, Tim encountered another kid who informed him that the brothers had not shown up. Even though Craig Ball had been scheduled to attend the Royal Ambassadors meeting at the church, he also failed to show up, which was very uncharacteristic of him. It would turn out that throughout the course of the day, Joey and Billy had asked a number of kids to accompany them on an excursion to Murphy's Cave after school let out. While all of these kids declined, it seemed apparent that the brothers had convinced Craig to tag along with them. Well, sure enough, a pair of teenage boys named John Janes and Lynn Strube would confirm that they had explored Murphy's Cave that afternoon, and when they emerged from it, Joey, Billy, and Craig were waiting at the entrance carrying flashlights and a shovel. They chatted with the trio for a few minutes before they went their separate ways at around 4:30 p.m. John said that as he was leaving, he looked back and saw the three boys entering the cave, but there would be other reported sightings of them over the course of the next 45 minutes. At 4:40, a janitor named Thomas Breedlove was doing cleaning inside A.D. Stoll Elementary School and said that he looked out the window and saw three boys cutting across someone's lawn and heading towards the Route 79 road cut construction zone, which was located about 3 blocks south from Murphy's Cave. At 5 o'clock, a motorist named Wade Woodson saw a boy matching Billy's description at the road cut construction zone near Southside Christian Church and said he was carrying a small shovel. At 5:15, Louise Kohler, a school teacher who knew all three boys personally, was certain that she saw them on a high slope which overlooked the east side of the construction zone. Around the same time, Thomas Breedlove looked out the school windows again and recalled seeing three boys standing on this same road-cut slope, which seemed to corroborate Kohler's account. But after this, there would be no more reported sightings of Joey, Billy, or Craig, and this would turn out to be the last time any of them were confirmed to be alive. Since the Hoag brothers had gone to Murphy's Cave the previous day, their family figured they might have snuck out to go there again, so they went to the cave and shouted for them through the opening. But they got no response, so Helen became concerned enough to return home and report her son's missing to the Hannibal Police Department. By 6:30 p.m., the police had shown up at Murphy's Cave to perform a search of it, but found nothing. As a precaution, all trains which had left Hannibal after 4:40 that afternoon were stopped and searched, but there was no sign of the three boys. It seemed very unlikely that they had decided to run away, because when Craig returned home from school, he changed his pants before leaving again, but left behind money in the pocket of his old pants. Since it had rained earlier that day, there was fear that if the boys had gone inside one of the caves to explore them, moisture could have weakened the soil and caused the ceiling to collapse on them. In fact, it started raining again during the late evening hours, creating even more concern that a collapse might take place. As a result, an extensive search and rescue operation was launched, which involved volunteers from the area's Mark Twain Emergency Squad, who checked a number of caves throughout the town. Since the boys had gone to the road cut near Route 79, the emergency squad looked into the possibility that they may have entered one of the makeshift caves which had been caused by the construction. The road crew's work had still been ongoing at 5:15 p.m., and some dirt and rocky debris had actually been dumped into one of the holes after the boys were last seen, which blocked off the opening. The emergency squad spent the early morning hours of May the 11th digging through this debris to search the hole, but they found nothing to indicate that the boys had gone in there. Squad member Woody St. Clair would later describe how challenging it was to search all these caves by stating, quote, "There were many passages that just ended, so you didn't know if it was a recent collapse or had always been that way. You'd have to open all of them up to be completely thorough, perhaps an impossible feat given the confines of the vast cave. End quote. The passages in some of these caves would stretch for miles, and it wasn't uncommon for searchers to check through different passageways and wind up bumping into each other later on, since they often went around in circles. Some passages were too small for an adult to squeeze through, but the searchers did wonder if the boys might have been small enough to make it into these tight spots and wind up in a location where adult rescuers could not reach them. At one point, a searcher noticed a foul odor just outside Murphy's cave. Even though many people believed it was nothing more than the smell of an animal who may have died in the nearby woods, St. Clair personally thought it might be human decomposition. Unfortunately, searchers were never able to track down the source of the odor. Since the boys could not be found, the National Guard and the FBI were brought in to assist with the search, along with the Speleological Society of America, aka the SSA, a newly formed cave search and rescue organization based out of Washington, D.C. Run by President William Karras, the SSA consisted of professional cave searchers, and their efforts to find Joey, Billy, and Craig would lead to what was at that time the largest cave search in the history of the United States. As a result, the Lost Boys of Hannibal would become a major story which received media coverage all over the country. Since the searches of Murphy's Cave came up empty, much of the focus was placed on the all-new cave network which had recently been unearthed by the construction work at the road cut near Route 79. The day before the boys went missing, Billy had told another local family that he and his brother were planning to explore a cave at the base of the hill below Lover's Leap, a scenic overlook located directly across from the corner of Route 79 and Fulton Avenue. Lover's Leap stood 300 feet above the Mississippi River, and a bulldozer had recently broken the dirt off the hillside and created a new hole. However, this particular opening, as well as many of the others in the road cut construction zone, could not be accessed without a ladder. A homemade ladder was found in the Hogue's basement, which had red clay mud samples on it, so it seemed apparent that the brothers had already used this ladder to access these caves prior to May the 10th. Even though many of the new openings at the road cut were inaccessible, there were a couple of new walk-in caves in the area, and searchers felt that sections of these caves appeared they were going to imminently collapse due to the ongoing construction work. So of course, there was fear that the boys could have been the victim of an accidental cave-in and were buried under some rubble. Since they were seen carrying a shovel before they disappeared, there was also speculation that the boys attempted to use it to dig their own tunnel to explore, but wound up getting trapped inside. Searchers would recall finding sections of the caves where the ceilings were made out of red clay instead of shale. If the boys had disturbed a weakened section of one of these clay ceilings, perhaps by using the shovel they had been carrying, this could have caused the ceiling to collapse and bury them beneath debris. Another theory was that the boys could have become trapped in an area known as a dynamite bubble. Sometimes, a dynamite blast does not always cause a cave ceiling to instantly collapse and only weakens it, so if the boys had wandered into one of these areas and touched the ceiling, it easily could have collapsed on top of them. 3 days after the boys went missing, an emergency squad member found a sock in a rock quarry, and when Craig's stepbrother looked at it, he believed that the sock was Craig's. However, since the sock was a popular, widely worn brand, there was no definitive proof that it belonged to Craig or the Hogue brothers or had any relevance to the case. One searcher named Lloyd Atwood became convinced that the boys might have become trapped on a lower level of Murphy's Cave, which was not thoroughly searched because of inadequate air inside the passage. Atwood believed that he had seen some unexplained shadows in the entranceway to this lower level, which may have been the boys, so drilling and digging was performed in this area. While it wound up uncovering a small area which appeared to be a larger intersection of several passages, no one was there. Unfortunately, in spite of the extensive search effort, no trace of Joey, Billy, or Craig could be found in any of the caves. This event wound up making American history as it marked the first time a search and rescue operation for someone who had become lost inside a cave failed to recover the victim, dead or alive. And of course, what made this situation all the more unusual is that it involved 3 unrecovered victims, not just one. The search operation was eventually called off, but in tribute to the missing boys, the Route 79 road cut system was formally named Lost Boys Cave by the Missouri Speleological Survey, and all cave openings within the Hannibal city limits were closed. Shockingly, while the disappearances of Joey and Billy were tragic enough, Mike and Helen Hoag would be forced to endure the loss of two more sons over the next decade. On February the 4th, 1968, less than a year after his younger brothers went missing, 25-year-old Michael Hoag Jr. was killed in a car accident in Lexington County, South Carolina. And on October the 23rd, 1976, 16-year-old Robin Hoag, who had reportedly idolized Joey and Billy, died in what was described as a quote-unquote tragic shooting. As for Michael Hoag Sr., he passed away on November the 2nd, 1989, at the age of 73. On May the 10th, 1992, to commemorate the 25-year anniversary of their disappearances, a memorial service was held for Joey, Billy, and Craig, in which a granite memorial marker for them was placed on top of Lover's Leap. By this point, both of Craig's parents were deceased, so Helen Hoag was the only surviving parent to attend the service, though she passed away 3 years later on June the 30th, 1995, at the age of 71. According to Dee Dee Hoag, her mother stayed up every night for years waiting for Billy and Joey to come home. Helen had told Dee Dee that she wished she could find out what happened to her sons before she passed away, but Dee Dee assured her that she might finally learn the truth in the afterlife. Thankfully, neither of the Hoag parents would be forced to deal with the traumatic development which occurred 5 months after Helen's death. In November of that year, the Hannibal Police Department received a tip from someone who claimed that one of Craig's relatives had told him that Mike Hoag was responsible for the boys' disappearances. The story went that the three boys had returned to the Hoag residence after exploring the caves, but Mike lashed out because his sons had disobeyed him. As a result, he wound up beating all three boys to death and burying their remains in the basement. No one really believed this story, but since the Hoag family had never been formally questioned and their residence was never searched following the boys' disappearance, the Hannibal PD still decided to look into it. By this point, the Hoags had moved out and their former residence had new owners living there who were reluctant to allow police to perform an excavation of their basement. But since there was no evidence to support the idea that Mike had murdered the boys, investigators ultimately dismissed the story and decided that an excavation was unnecessary. In April of 2006, a construction project was taking place in Hannibal in order to build a new version of A.D. Stoll Elementary School on Route 79 when the workers wound up uncovering a small cave. It was about 50 feet long and appeared to have a man-made symbol drawn on the wall featuring a circle, line, and arrow. A search was performed of this cave in order to see if the three missing boys might have wound up there, but nothing was found. Over the past few decades, a number of anniversary articles have been published about the Lost Boys of Hannibal, with Dee Dee usually functioning as the Hoag family's spokesperson. Dee Dee said that the disappearance of her brothers caused her to have a lifelong struggle with chronic anxiety and claustrophobia, and she also suspected that the three boys may have fallen into one of the openings at the road cut and were unknowingly sealed in there by the equipment that was being used by the construction workers. One prevalent rumor which has always spread throughout the Hannibal area is that the boys might be buried beneath the southbound lanes of Route 79 near Lover's Leap. But while many local residents believe that the boys perished after becoming lost or trapped inside a cave, the possibility of them being abducted and murdered has not been completely ruled out, and I will be discussing this theory in further detail very soon. Sadly, Dee Dee passed away in February of 2018 at the age of 67, and she was also preceded in death by two of her other brothers, Tim and Fred. Of the 11 Hoag children, only one of the sons, Dan, and three of the daughters, Bobby, Linny, and Denise, are currently still alive. But after 56 years, there are still no conclusive answers about what happened to Joey, Billy, and Craig, so the mystery of the Lost Boys of Hannibal continues to remain unsolved. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. But before we continue, we would like to send out a special thanks to our sponsor, HelloFresh. While we are finally reaching the end of summer and transitioning into fall, we're going to have many places to be. And needless to say, standing in the checkout line is not one of them, which is why you should leave your meal planning and grocery shopping to HelloFresh. With pre-portioned ingredients and easy step-by-step recipes delivered to your door, you'll wind up saving so much time and cut out the hassle. That's why it's a great idea to go to HelloFresh.com/50WentCold and use code 50WentCold for 50% off plus free shipping. And instead of calling for delivery, it's a better idea to get HelloFresh, which is 25% cheaper than takeout and less expensive than grocery shopping, too. All you have to do is choose your recipes and receive fresh, pre-portioned ingredients, which will allow you to get cooking quickly. And another key to dinnertime success is variety, which HelloFresh definitely provides, since you have no less than 40 chef-crafted recipes to select from every week. From family-friendly to fit and wholesome, you'll always find new and exciting recipes to try and love. As an example, I recently had a HelloFresh meal which was a combination of two of my favorite foods, bacon-wrapped salmon, which comes with a delicious side of potatoes and broccolini, and is also topped with tarragon cream. Preparing this tasty meal is so easy that it can be done in only 35 minutes, and you'll never have to utter the dreaded phrase, I guess you could say, the meal went cold. So go to HelloFresh.com/50WentCold and use code 50WentCold for 50% off plus free shipping. Once again, that's HelloFresh.com/50WentCold and the promo code is 50WentCold. Thank you and enjoy the rest of this episode. So I have to admit that when I was first introduced to the case, I automatically went the Occam's razor route and believed that the most likely solution to the mystery was that Joey Hoag, Billy Hoag, and Craig Dowell got trapped in a cave somewhere and were simply never found during the search effort. And that may very well be what happened, but you also have to look at the historical context of the situation to understand why it's so unusual. I mentioned earlier that this marked the first time in the history of the United States in which a search and rescue operation failed to recover a person who had gone missing inside a cave. I mean, there have been past documented rescue attempts like this where a victim was found deceased, but here, the largest cave search of all time not only failed to find any trace of one victim, it failed to find any trace of three. Yes, if the three boys happened to be together when a cave collapsed on them, that would definitely explain why they were never found, but regardless, I always find it very disturbing when multiple people happen to disappear simultaneously. For another famous example of this, just look at the Springfield 3 disappearance from 1992, which also took place in Missouri, about 240 miles away from Hannibal. Any way you look at it, unless Joey, Billy, and Craig all somehow managed to run away and start a new life, which seems pretty much impossible, there are no good options in this case. The idea of these boys being abducted and murdered is horrible enough, but is it any worse than the idea of them being trapped in a dark, enclosed cave and slowly dying of starvation and dehydration? Of course, given that Hannibal's tourism industry is based around the life of Mark Twain, and the plotline of The Adventures of Tom Sawyer involves children exploring caves, it's not hard to imagine why any kid growing up in this town would develop a fascination with the subject. I mean, Joey, Billy, and Craig were told multiple times by their parents to stay away from the caves because they were dangerous, but given their ages, I'm sure that only brought out their rebellious streak and made them all the more intrigued to explore them. Hell, in the novel, even though Tom Sawyer experiences a terrifying ordeal by getting lost in McDougal's cave for several days, he still decides to go back in there on another adventure once he realizes it contains hidden gold. The story of the Lost Boys of Hannibal could easily have been turned into a Mark Twain-esque novel, but the problem, of course, is that the real-life story does not contain a happy ending, or any ending for that matter. Even though Billy was 2 years younger than Joey, it sounds like he was a major influence over him, and while Joey was a lot less mischievous than his brother, he would not hesitate to tag along with him on his adventures. I find it pretty heartbreaking that Joey had a major fascination with space travel and dreamed of becoming an astronaut, but did not live long enough to witness what should have been a momentous occasion for him, and that's the first moon landing, which took place 2 years after he went missing. And while this likely has nothing to do with the main story, it's worth noting that in August of 1966, 9 months before he vanished, Joy had reported seeing a UFO in the sky over Lover's Leap and made a drawing of it. Since this turned out to be near the last location where the boys were seen alive, you can see why UFO abduction has even been pushed forward as a possible theory for their disappearances. Anyway, to add further historical context to the situation, Hannibal had actually experienced another similar event like this nearly a century earlier when five boys, ages 9 to 13, got lost in a newly uncovered cave in April of 1873. Once again, a lot of construction was taking place in Hannibal at that time, and the cave had recently been unearthed by some quarry workers, so these five adventurous boys decided to go in there. They had been carrying candles with them, but got lost in the darkness when the candles went out. But thankfully, once a search effort was launched, the boys were all found safely several hours after they were reported missing. That search and rescue operation was nowhere near as extensive as the one performed for the Lost Boys of Hannibal in 1967, so I think this comparison only added to the surprise over no trace of these boys ever being found. But once you go deep enough into one of these caves, it is incredibly easy to get lost. In John Wingate's book, The Lost Boys of Hannibal, Inside America's Largest Cave Search, he makes reference to another incident which took place in June of 1961, when 16-year-old Ed Owen and his 15-year-old brother, Ron Owen, decided to explore Murphy's Cave alongside two of their friends. It provides a vivid account of how the four boys got lost and walked around in circles for several hours until they miraculously found their way out. They first entered the cave by tying one end of a big ball of heavy string to the outside and gradually unwound it as they went further in, but they eventually reached the point when they ran out of string and decided to keep going on their own. But of course, they soon got lost, and the only reason they found their way out is when they eventually came back and found the end of the string and followed it back to the entrance. As far as I know, Joey, Billy, and Craig were not carrying any string on the afternoon they went missing, so it would have been very easy for the situation for the Owen brothers to have repeated itself. So let's look at the timeline on the day these boys went missing. We know that Joey and Billy had developed a fascination with exploring Murphy's Cave and were looking to go back there, even though their parents told them not to. At around 4:30 p.m. on May the 10th, John Janes and Lynn Strube confirmed that they crossed paths with the Hoag brothers and Craig Dowell at the entrance to Murphy's Cave and saw them enter while they were leaving. Murphy's Cave would be extensively searched after the boys went missing, and while they were not found in there, that isn't too surprising, since there were multiple eyewitness sightings of the boys after 4:30 that day. We have the janitor, Thomas Breedlove, the teacher, Louise Kohler, and the motorist, Wayne Woodson, who all reported seeing one or all three of the boys near the Route 79 road cut construction zone between 4:40 and 5:15. Sure, eyewitnesses in missing persons cases can often be mistaken, but these sightings all seem to corroborate each other, and Louise Kohler did know all the boys personally. So if the sightings are accurate, the boys may have only been inside Murphy's Cave for a few minutes, but then, possibly because the Hoag brothers had already been there on previous occasions, they decided to go exploring elsewhere. This is why one of the most prominent theories is that they entered one of the freshly unearthed caves at the road cut construction zone, but since construction work was still going at that point, they may have accidentally been sealed inside or were buried underneath some debris caused by a cave-in. That's a pretty horrible way to die, but I guess the silver lining is that at least it would have been instantaneous and did not involve the boys dying a slow death over a prolonged period of time. But of course, this theory is pure speculation, because no one can verify actually having seen the boys entering any of the caves at that location before they disappeared. There was an interesting alternate scenario presented by a Hannibal resident named Leo Bledsoe, who lived near Murphy's Cave. I mentioned earlier that the opening to the cave was located near a viaduct which ran over Bear Creek and was also under construction at that time. The day before the boys went missing, Bledsoe was certain that he had seen all three of them walking over some narrow boards which spanned over a 6-foot gap between a roadbed and the viaduct's deck. There was a 30-foot drop from these boards into some concrete forms below which had not yet been filled. So, theoretically, if the boys decided to return to that location on May the 10th and walked over the boards again, could they have fallen off or caused the boards to break? If they took a fatal 30-foot fall into the forms, Could the construction crew have later poured concrete into the forms without realizing that the boys' bodies were down there? Well, I've discussed this scenario in podcast episodes about other cases, such as the Springfield 3 disappearance, and the biggest issue with the idea of missing people being encased in concrete at large-scale construction sites is that once their bodies decompose, it would create an air pocket that severely weakened the integrity of the concrete and create a structural void, something which eventually would be noticed. Not to mention that if the J.A. Tobin Construction Company poured concrete over the bodies of three missing boys, they would have to be completely incompetent or orchestrating a major cover-up, but we'll talk more about that angle momentarily. But first, let's talk about the possibility that the large-scale search and rescue operation from the Speleological Society of America could have missed finding the boys in one of the caves. The SSA had only been in operation for a few years at this point, and its president, William Karas, was a fairly controversial and divisive figure. Most of the cave searchers involved in this operation would say that they shunned publicity, as their only priority was to find the missing boys, but Karas often rubbed people the wrong way by ensuring he kept himself in the spotlight. Some of the searchers found the non-stop presence of the media and Hannibal to be distracting, and felt that Karas was more focused on speaking to the press and maintaining good PR, rather than maintaining an organized search and rescue operation. In fact, one source said that he overheard Karas tell someone to get a boat and check some of the islands in the Mississippi River for the boys, but stated, quote, "If you find those little SOBs, don't tell anyone, not the police or the parents. Let me know, and I'll come and get them and make the announcement," end quote. So yes, even though many of these searchers worked day and night on no sleep and drove themselves to the point of exhaustion to find Joey, Billy, and Craig, there was some question whether Karras' constant desire for media attention prevented the search effort from being as thorough as it could have been. However, given how extensive and labyrinthian the cave system underneath Hannibal was, even the most organized search operation couldn't have possibly checked everywhere, as this would have required some massive excavations that cost millions upon millions of dollars. And if the boys do not actually get lost or trapped inside the caves to begin with, then all this discussion about Karras' competency might be a moot point. Overall, I would say that most people with first-hand knowledge of this case, including the victim's family members and residents of Hannibal at that time, believe that the most likely explanation is that Joey, Billy, and Craig died inside the caves and were never found. I mean, I've covered countless cases on this podcast in which victims went missing in a wilderness area and the original search efforts failed to find them, but that someone would stumble upon the victim's remains in the same area years after the fact, which means they were missed the first time around. If that sort of thing can happen in missing persons cases which occur in a vast open area, imagine how much more likely the scenario would be for an underground cave system. And of course, you also have to take into account that these three victims were kids and could possibly squeeze into small, tight areas which an adult searcher would be unable to reach. Right before the boys went missing, John Janes had encountered them after exploring Murphy's Cave, and here's a quote John shared about the cave's interior. Quote, "The passages were very small, branching this way and that, and we had to crawl on our belly to get through some of them. We could sit up in some areas, but none of the areas in this particular part of the cave were high enough to stand," end quote. But since there is no concrete evidence to support any particular scenario, we do have to explore alternate possibilities besides the boys simply getting lost or trapped. The local newspaper, the Hannibal Courier-Post, has always provided extensive coverage of this story, and in 2012, they published a 45-year anniversary article which featured a number of comments from a man named Greg Henderson, who was 11 years old at the time the boys went missing and a good friend of the Hoag brothers. Greg made a number of wild claims in this article, which I have not seen in any other sources, as he was not interviewed or even mentioned in John Wingate's Lost Boys of Hannibal book. Greg was one of many kids who declined the Hoag brothers' offer to accompany them to the caves on the day they went missing, but he expressed his surprise that Craig went with them, stating, quote, "Craig Dowell, he was an acquaintance. I don't think he was really good friends with Joey, but he wasn't no big friend of Billy and I can tell you that. What I don't even get is why he was even with them. I can never understand that," end quote. Well, the Lost Boys of Hannibal book paints a different picture of Craig's relationship with the Hoag brothers, as they were depicted as good friends who hung out together all the time, so it would not have been unusual for Craig to accompany them on an excursion to the caves. Greg Henderson also made this very odd statement, quote, "It would be quite interesting if you could go down and dig in that hole. My own opinion is you're going to find Billy and Joey. Where you're going to find Craig, I don't know. I think something bad happened to him." End quote. Wait, so is he trying to imply that Billy and Joey got trapped in the caves, but something completely different happened to Craig? Did Craig split off from the brothers before they entered the caves, and then just happened to get murdered by someone else? If so, that would be one hell of a coincidence. Greg also seems to put some credence into the long-running conspiracy theories that the missing boys were accidentally buried underground due to the work on the Route 79 construction project, and even worse, the people in power knew about this and tried to ensure the boys would never be found. It's been reported that the J.A. Tobin Construction Company never placed any warnings or caution tape around the makeshift holes they created with their earth-moving equipment and their dynamite, so if this played a role in the boys' death, there could have been potentially major liability issues and lawsuits. In the Courier Post article, Greg Henderson alleges a number of things which I have never seen corroborated by any other source, such as the idea that certain people were only putting up the pretense of attempting a search for the boys. For instance, Greg stated, quote, "I know guys who went looking for them, and guys would go in far enough to sit down and wait for a while. I don't think they felt like doing it." End quote. Greg also claimed that machines which were brought in to conduct the search could go as deep as 39 feet underground, but for reasons unknown, the town mayor, Harry Musgrove, specifically told the searchers not to go any deeper than 37 feet. Greg then made this statement about Mayor Musgrove, quote, "I can't tell you for a fact why they did it. I was 11 years old and I heard it happening. I don't think he wanted to find them. If they had, what would have happened? What would have been the ramifications? I don't think a lot of that was made public." End quote. Well, given that he was only 11 years old when this took place, it's possible that Greg is sharing a lot of unsubstantiated rumors and gossip which have passed through the area over the years, even though they may not have any basis in fact. I do have to acknowledge that if you look back at the initial media coverage of this case, Mayor Musgrove does often publicly express his skepticism that the boys got trapped in the caves. Here is one quote he shared with the press, quote, "I don't feel the boys are in the cave. I think they are in some other safe place. They could be out having some fun. That's our only hope now. I'm more inclined to believe they ran away. If we keep this vigil up, the kids might never come back. You can't come back when you have 200 or 300 people looking for you." End quote. Well, that statement might have made some sense at the time Musgrove said it, but I think there's no chance the boys ran away, as no evidence was ever found to indicate that any of them were still alive past May the 10th, 1967. However, before pushing any conspiracy theories about a potential cover-up, you have to account for how large this search effort really was. People from all over the country traveled to Hannibal to offer their assistance, and I'm sure they couldn't have cared less about any potential lawsuits the town or the construction company might wind up facing. I just don't see how you could orchestrate a concerted effort to prevent all these folks from different places from finding the boys or agreeing to keep silent if they happen to stumble upon the remains. Now, I just mentioned how William Karras was criticized in some circles as being an attention hound who often seemed more preoccupied with talking to the media rather than making his best effort at finding the boys, but that's the exact reason I don't believe he ever would have gone along with a cover-up of that nature. If the boys were found alive and rescued, this would have generated so much positive publicity for Karras and the SSA, but instead, they wound up making American history by becoming the first search and rescue operation who failed to find a missing victim inside a cave. For someone who supposedly had such a large ego, I doubt that Karras would have wanted to go down in infamy like that. Don't get me wrong, I certainly don't rule out the possibility that the boys may have been killed by an accidental cave-in caused by the construction work, but if so, I doubt anyone knew this for certain, or that they made a concerted attempt to prevent the remains from being found. So now we have to explore the possibility that Joey, Billy, and Craig may have actually been the victims of foul play. For starters, I'm going to completely disregard the rumor that popped up in 1995 about all three boys being murdered by Mike Hoag inside his residence before he buried their bodies underneath the basement. Yes, the basement was technically never excavated, but there are just so many things wrong with the scenario that I can understand why the police didn't bother. I mean, yes, if the brothers had returned home that night, I'm sure their father would have been angry about them disobeying him, but not to the point of committing murder. And since he didn't live there, why would Craig have gone inside the Hoag residence to begin with? Even if you put aside the question of motive, the timeline makes this whole scenario pretty much impossible. The last confirmed sighting of the three boys was at the road cut construction zone at 5:15 p.m., but the police had already been notified about their disappearance and were performing a search of Murphy's cave by 6:30. There's no way that Mike would have been able to kill three people and bury their remains in the basement during such a narrow time frame. Not to mention that a number of other children from the Hoag family would have been in the residence when this crime supposedly occurred, yet they've all managed to remain silent for the past six decades, even after their parents passed away. Yeah, this whole story is completely ridiculous, and I'm glad that Mike and Helen Hoag were already deceased by the time this rumor came to light, and they didn't have to deal with the trauma of being falsely accused of the murders of their own children. No, if the three boys were victims of foul play, it likely came at the hands of an unknown third party sometime after they were last seen at the road cut construction zone. This was located right next to Route 79, so perhaps someone abducted the boys or lured them into a vehicle and managed to drive them out of the area and kill them before the search effort was even launched. With so much focus being placed on searching the caves in Hannibal, it would have been very easy to dispose of the bodies and all other evidence at another location without being noticed. While there have never been any suspects or persons of interest in this case, one individual who wound up drawing some attention was an unidentified mystery man who had been seen hanging around on Lover's Leap for several days before the boys went missing. He was described as being a white male between 30 to 50 years old, and apparently spoke to some of the local kids while he was in the area. At one point, a construction worker confronted the man and asked why he was spending so much time atop Lover's Leap, and he simply replied that he was watching the construction activity. A number of witnesses, including William Karras, also recalled seeing the mystery man after the boys went missing, and said that he usually showed up on a hill near the construction zone caves in order to watch the search effort during the early morning hours. The Lost Boys of Hannibal book says that Karras apparently made a statement that the man had planted false clues in order to waste the searcher's time, but he didn't provide any specific details about what he meant. Regardless, the man eventually left the area and was never identified. Okay, it's possible that the mystery man had nothing to do with the boy's disappearance, and he has no relevance at all. But now we're going to talk about one of the most controversial aspects of the case, and that's the suspected involvement of one of the most infamous serial killers of all time, John Wayne Gacy. I'm sure you're well aware that Gacy was arrested in December of 1978 while living in Norwood Park Township near Chicago, and it turned out he was responsible for the rape, torture, and murder of at least 33 young men and teenage boys, most of whom had the remains concealed in the crawl space of Gacy's home. And while Gacy has since been executed, there's always been speculation that he could have been responsible for additional murders, and the remains of five of his victims have still never been identified. At the time Joey, Billy, and Craig went missing, Gacy was living in Waterloo, Iowa, which was a four-hour drive from Hannibal. There is no evidence that Gacy ever visited Hannibal, but following his arrest, the authorities discovered that he kept detailed records of his travels, and they showed that he once went to the town of Ladonia, Missouri in 1967, which is only about 35 miles outside Hannibal. And Gacy's mother was also living in Little Rock, Arkansas at that time, so if he ever drove there from Waterloo in order to visit her, he would have used U.S. Route 61, which went right through Hannibal. In an odd coincidence, it would be on May the 10th, 1968, exactly 1 year after the Lost Boys of Hannibal disappeared, when Gacy was indicted on a sodomy charge for sexually assaulting a 15-year-old boy, and after serving 18 months of a 10-year prison sentence, he relocated to Illinois. Now, Gacy's first confirmed murder occurred in 1972, 5 years before this case took place, and while the youngest age of any of Gacy's confirmed victims was 14 years old, which was Craig's age, he is not known to have harmed anyone as young as Joey or Billy. When John Wingate published his Lost Boys of Hannibal book in 2017, he devoted a section to exploring the possibility that Gacy was involved in the boys' disappearance and may have even been the mystery man seen on Lover's Leap. The three boys' dental records were even compared with the dentals of Gacy's unidentified victims, but none of them were a match. Now, if the Gacy connection had ended there, there wouldn't be much controversy, but in 2019, Wingate decided to explore this theory even further by releasing a follow-up book titled Soul Speak, Missing Children Reveal Their Serial Killer from Beyond. Wingate felt compelled to publish the book after being contacted by three separate women claiming to be psychics who all claimed they had similar visions of John Wayne Gacy offering the three boys a ride home near the caves before he proceeded to drive them to a nearby wooded area in order to sexually assault and murder them and bury their bodies. Wingate said that he became convinced of their stories since the three women apparently corroborated each other's findings independently, and two of them flat out said that Gacy was the aforementioned mystery man seen on Lover's Leap. It's worth noting that the Lost Boys of Hannibal book contains an odd section involving Louise Kohler, the school teacher who was one of the last witnesses to see the boys alive. Kohler claimed that 2 days after they vanished, she brought her mother to the road cut construction zone in order to check out the search effort. While standing next to a redbud tree in a grassy area between the construction zone and the Southside Christian Church, Kohler's mother, who claimed to be psychic, suddenly said, quote, "They're below us. Why don't they dig there? They're still alive, calling for help. I can feel it. I feel they're weak, but still alive," end quote. Even though Kohler said she shared this information with the searchers, they pretty much ignored her and never performed an excavation on the area that her mother had pointed out. I don't know if this story has any significance, but the fact that it was included in the book would indicate to me that Wingate was already fairly open-minded about psychics even before his encounters with these three women. While Souls Speak and the entire John Wayne Gacy theory in general have been the subject of considerable criticism from Frankie Campoletta and Chris Coder, the co-hosts of the Lost Boys of Hannibal podcast, who accuse Wingate of hurting and lying to surviving members of the Hoag family. For his part, Wingate has denied ever lying to them and maintains that he never actively pursued this Gacy angle, as he says that all three of these psychics came to him, and a member of the Hoag family even put him in touch with one of them. I guess one of my main issues with this theory is that I don't see why any of the three boys would have accepted a ride with Gacy or climbed into his car, because they all lived only a few blocks away from where they were last seen and wouldn't have needed anyone to drive them home. All I'll say is that I'll need a lot more conclusive evidence than the word of a few psychics in order to believe that John Wayne Gacy was responsible for killing these boys. But it's worth noting that during their extensive research for their own podcast, Frankie Campoletta and Chris Coders have uncovered information about another individual whom they are looking at as a potential suspect. His name was Terry Hill, and at the time, he lived in the town of Moberly, about 70 miles southwest of Hannibal. Hill worked for the Missouri Training Center for Men and was considered to be an expert tracker at finding convicts who escaped from prison, so the authorities thought his skills might be useful for finding the three missing boys. And if you search through the newspaper archives, Terry Hill's arrival in Hannibal was reported in several publications. This ordinarily might not have any significance, but sometime during the mid-2000s, Hill was living in Monroe County, Missouri, and wound up being arrested and extradited to Huntsville, Texas, on child molestation charges. Specific details about these charges are not publicly known, but you can find several contemporary news articles which show that Hill was a scoutmaster for the Boy Scouts of America while he was living in Moberly during the late 1960s, so draw your own conclusions. After he arrived in Huntsville, Hill received a 15-year prison sentence for the child molestation charges and died behind bars in 2013. Of course, there is no direct evidence that Hill was involved in the disappearances of Joey, Billy, and Craig, as he lived 70 miles away from Hannibal, and there's nothing to indicate he paid a visit to the town on the day they went missing. And even if Hill was a vile child molester, that doesn't necessarily mean he was a murderer. Regardless, it's still an interesting coincidence that someone who played a public role in the search effort would wind up having their own legal issues with children decades later. Theoretically, if Hill was responsible for the disappearances, what better way to mislead the investigation than by participating in the search for them? But again, there really isn't any more evidence implicating Terry Hill than John Wayne Gacy. If Joey, Billy, and Craig were the victims of foul play, I guess it's hard to imagine only one person being involved, as it would have been difficult for them to subdue three boys, as Billy in particular was known for being a strong-willed kid who likely would have put up a fight. But stranger things have happened, and if the perpetrator had a gun, that could have been enough to control all three of them. However, if a homicide did take place, just imagine how lucky the perpetrator or perpetrators would have had to be. They wound up abducting and killing three adventurous boys who were known for exploring caves in a town which was full of them, and they did so right after the boys had been seen around some caves. This timing pretty much ensured that the entire investigation and search effort would revolve around the caves, and any alternate scenarios, such as abduction and murder, would not be given as much focus. So that means the perpetrator pretty much got away with the perfect crime because they managed to make three victims disappear without leaving any incriminating evidence behind. Overall, while I can't completely discount the possibility of foul play, I do think the most logical explanation is that Joey, Billy, and Craig all perished in one of the caves and the remains were simply missed during the search effort. If they died as the result of some sort of cave-in and were buried underneath a pile of debris, or they managed to become trapped in a section that was difficult for adult searchers to reach, then you can understand why they were never found. Regardless of what actually happened, the whole situation was a major tragedy for both the Dowell and Hoag families, particularly Mike and Helen Hoag, who were preceded in death by four of their 11 children, who all died at young ages. At this moment, only four of the Hoag children are still alive, and it would be nice to get them conclusive answers someday. I know that the Lost Boys of Hannibal podcast is helping keep this story in the spotlight, and I mentioned during the intro that the co-host has spent the last several years working on a documentary. I have no idea when it will be completed or released, but it may help bring an all-new fresh set of eyes to the case. Even if there was no foul play involved, this story is still a cautionary tale about what can happen if children attempt dangerous activities, so it's important that the memories of Joey Hoag, Billy Hoag, and Craig Dowell are not forgotten. Regardless, this is still an unsolved mystery, so if you happen to have any information about the disappearances of the Lost Boys of Hannibal, please contact the appropriate authorities. Anyway, another special thanks to listener Christine True for narrating the opening of this week's episode. If you've already entered our listener voiceover contest before, you are automatically eligible for our next random drawing, so you don't have to do anything. But if you would like to enter and haven't already done so, all you have to do is send me an email under the subject line, Trail Went Cold Contest, naming the one unsolved cold case you would most like to see featured on this podcast. Once again, send me an email under the subject line, Trail Went Cold Contest, to robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Another reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. Over the past 5 years, our Patreon page has released dozens of exclusive bonus episodes, which are all currently available in our archives. This past month, I released a follow-up to a popular Patreon episode I released last year, where I discuss my top 10 favorite movies inspired by true crimes. I've also dropped an exclusive bonus episode from my spin-off podcast, The Path Went Chilly, in which myself and my two co-hosts, Jules and Ashley, discuss the 1985 disappearance of George Owens. And for our patrons in Tier 3, I've recorded another new audio commentary track, which can be played over a classic episode of Unsolved Mysteries, and we now have over 50 of these commentary tracks in our archives.
I'd also like to take a few moments to thank our most recent listeners who have signed up with us on Patreon this week, and they are Jason and Bogus Billy. Thank you so much for your support.
And once again, I just wanted to remind everyone that this coming Saturday, August the 9th, at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, we'll be holding one of our annual Unsolved Mysteries Live Watch Marathons, in which I screen classic segments from the show, and you can watch them and chat with myself and your fellow listeners. If you'd like to join us, you can find the link to our screening room in our show notes, and it's also pinned at the top of our social media pages. Once again, it's taking place this coming Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and I hope to see you there. Anyway, The Trail Went Cold will also be appearing on Podcast Row at CrimeCon, which is being held from September the 22nd to the 24th at the World Center Marriott in Orlando, Florida. Our podcast has a specialized promo code which can be used to get a special 10% discount on tickets, so in order to do so, please visit CrimeCon.com and use the special promo code COLE23. That's COLE23. And in just over 2 weeks, The Trail Went Cold will also be appearing at the True Crime Podcast Festival, which is taking place from August the 25th to the 27th at the DoubleTree by Hilton Hotel in Austin, Texas. We've got a specialized promo code which you can use in order to get a 15% discount on tickets, so please visit their website at truecrimepodcastfestival.com and use our promo code TRAIL. Once again, that's truecrimepodcastfestival.com and the promo code is TRAIL. I just wanted to give another shout-out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I need to provide a big thanks to Miguel Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. So have yourselves a great week and join us next Wednesday for another brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold.